From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of April. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And I'll tell you about the WIP Plus program that farmers, corn, soybeans, wheat, should all sign up for if they get the opportunity in the next few days.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, May corn today up 8 1/4. It finished at $3.17 1/2. July at $3.24 3/4, 7 1/2 higher. And September futures up 6 at $3.27 1/2. December corn up 4 3/4 at $3.36 3/4. And the March up 4 1/4 at $3.49 1/2. The May beans 4 higher at $8.34 3/4 on their settlement price. July up 1 3/4 at $8.42 1/2. September down 3/4. November 1 1/2 lower. It settled at $8.46 1/2. In January at $8.48 1/2, down 2 3/4. The bean oil futures at $25.57, up 22. Bean meal for the day down 80 cents at $2.88.30. July soft red winter wheat at $5.43 3/4, 2 1/2 cents lower on the afternoon. And the hard red July at $4.97 3/4, down 6 1/4. Live cattle futures in the June at $83.92 1/2, down 15 cents. May feeder cattle 7 1/2 lower at $116.67 1/2. And lean hogs on the day in the June, 20 cents lower at $47.90. Crude oil at $14.41 a barrel, up $2.84, and ethanol at 92 cents is up 2 7/10 cents. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson out of Hollister, Missouri. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start where we always do with the support and resistance and manage money.
Alrighty. We're going to move to July, December now, because May is coming to an end. When you look at July, we have support on 295, 274, 257, resistance 329, 351, 364, and the crossover point is down at 310. When you look at December, we have support at 325, 297, and 293, resistance 346, 361, and 394, with that crossover point being at 330. We go to beans, July support, 829, 820, and 805. Resistance, 866, 903, and 921. Channel is now 975 down to 819 and getting wider. We see the November beans support at 836, 812, and 751. Resistance, 873, 891, and 909. The channel is now 1010 down to 833, and the crossover point is at 881. Now, that channel is actually getting narrower. Look at managed money on soft red spring wheat. They're currently long 25,000 versus 9 last week. Corn short, 179 versus 119 last week. Beans, they're even. Last week, they were net long 12. Soy meal, they're long 17 versus 24 last week, and soy oil is net short 16 versus 3 last week. So a little bit of moving around, but you can see a lot of pressure on the corn side of things.
Let's take a look at a couple of the USDA milepost sorts of functions for the week. They're export inspections to begin with.
Well, wheat exports, Todd, are running 6% ahead of a year ago. They were 8% last week, so they've lost a little bit of gumption. Corn, 36% behind a year ago, was 36 last week, so it hasn't changed. Beans, 6% ahead of a year ago, they were 6% last week also, so no change there. We'll jump right into the export sale trade estimates for tomorrow. I don't often get these early enough to be able to give them to you, but I thought this was kind of interesting when you look at old crop wheat, and these are in metric tons. It's 100,000 to 350 on old crop, 200 to 500 new crop. Corn, 600,000 to 1.1 million on old crop and 50,000 to 300,000 on new crop. Soybeans, 300,000 to 750,000 on old crop and 50,000 to 300,000 on new crop. So, you know, if you compare this to last week's sales, we had wheat at 178, we had corn at 906, and we had beans at 244. So 300 to 750 is good to hear. Let's put it that way.
Let's stay with exports. It looks like the Chinese are in, with their state-owned, for some purchases from the United States.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting, actually. There's a crusher that said they have really, really low supplies. They bought 198,000 metric tons. That's 7.3 million bushels. And that's for delivery in August, September out of the Gulf. Now, that'll be the first shipment to China out of the Gulf since mid-December of 2019. So that was very good news. There's also another crusher that's in the market that is very low and has been requesting prices. So I guess we're hopeful that that might come about.
So that was COFCO in China. Let's switch nations, but stay in kind of the same vein. Zenno, which is Japanese, appears that it's going to buy some grain elevators in the United States?
Oh, yeah. Not just some. It's going to purchase 35 of the grain elevators that Bunge owns along the Mississippi River. And, you know, we went down to Zenno that time when we did the Follow the Corn tour, and it was extremely interesting. They are a company out of Japan, and they are very very organized from everything you could see. It's a very clean place. But this is something, I guess, that isn't surprising, and yet at the same time, it's concerning, although we want to make sure that the people who are taking the grain along the Mississippi River can handle it and can move it and are financially stable is probably the right word to use. I mean, they're not getting rid of all their grain elevators, just the ones that are along the Mississippi River. So, yeah, when I went to the USDA forum many years ago, I talked to someone from Cargill, and, I mean, those barges are unbelievably expensive. They're like $500,000 a barge, you know. And so maybe you get to a point when you're in that kind of a business that you say, you know what, I don't know if it's worth the investment that I'm going to have to make.
Let's come back here to the United States. We've been in the U.S., but to another USDA report. Crop progress was out on Monday. What you make of those numbers?
Well, I actually was pretty impressed. I thought that corn planting being at 7% was a good thing. I mean, you know, and beans being planted 2%. Well, not a surprise. I mean, you know, that's this particular time of the year. Wheat being at 11 compared to, the average guess was 11, excuse me. 7 is where it came in. A little disappointing. Winter wheat conditions not as good as we thought they were going to be, but still not really very surprising at all. So we're at least making some progress. That's one thing that's good. Even North Dakota's making some progress harvesting 2019. We've been talking about this every week, and they picked up 3% this week. We're at 86% done now, so we only have 14% left, which if you use the acres that they had originally said leaves about 483,000 acres, and I only use 75% of their 141 bushels, which is like 105 bushels, would mean that there's about 51 million bushels still sitting out there. Interesting, their topsoil moisture actually dropped from 44% down to 37, and subsoil went from 39 down to 34. So they had a week that was relatively dry.
Well, they'll be able to move, maybe. That was one of their big problems, is things are so very, very wet there that trying to get that kind of heavy machinery out is really hard for them to do. Anything else from other parts of the world? Brazil, maybe.
Well, I've got some from Brazil and some Argentina, a little bit. Brazil, 92% down on harvesting their beans. When you look at the advantage right now in terms of pricing, Brazil beans over U.S. beans. For June delivery, they only have a $1 advantage. We're $1 higher per ton than what they are, and for July, we're $3 lower. The only reason that someone might choose Brazil beans over ours is because, and we know this for a long time, they have better protein and better oil content. So, you know, that's something that crushers are definitely looking at. But it says to me that we're getting back into the game again. Now, the farmers down there sold 80% of their old crop on beans, and they're all the way up to 35% on next year's bean crop. That's usually only about 15% at this point in time. And it's because of the real. We've talked about this before. It's trading at 5.3 to the dollar right now, so it's gone down a little bit, but not that much. But what's interesting down there, Todd, is that predictions for the crop production in corn and beans continue to slip lower from people within the country, and it's because of the dry conditions that they've got. Not a surprise either. Brazil's sugar ethanol sector is in survival mode, you know, just like the U.S. And so, you know, one of the things you and I talk about a great deal is the impact of the U.S. dollar on our ability to export. And, you know, we're struggling to export to begin with. And we look at the dollar right now at, you know, it's at 100.4, basically. And so people have been asking, and I think it's important that we understand, why is the dollar going higher? You know, even though these interest rates have been lowered, we should expect the dollar to go lower, but it's not. And it's because other countries are investing their money here rather than in their own country. So, you know, that says volumes for how we as a country are viewed in the world by investors, you know, as being very stable. But it really makes it hard to be price competitive when you're trying to sell the commodities in the marketplace. Now, I would use that as a barometer as people who are listening. Watch what the U.S. dollar is doing. If we start to see the U.S. dollar weaken, I would say that that is the first indication that maybe things are beginning to settle down in other parts of the world. And so that'll give you at least a little bit of a hint. Now, in Argentina, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this, Todd. This is way beyond anything that I could ever think of. First, we'll go to what they have a main problem with water down there. We talked about it last week on the Paraná River where, you know, they can't even get close to be able to unload in some places. So they did appeal to Brazil, and Brazil is going to give them some more water. But this is the part I can't believe. Now, mind you, these are the people that owe the money. And now what they're doing is they're saying, we want a 3-year grace period from paying any of our debt. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? I can't picture myself doing this, you know. So they want a 3-year moratorium on all foreign debt payments, followed by a reduction in interest payments, as well as a plan to restructure the nation's debt to avoid another costly default, okay? Well, the IMF bailout package, that these are the people they're talking to first before anybody else. They owe them $70 billion. Now, this country has defaulted 9 times already. I have no idea what it's going to take for us to, you know, for anybody to figure out that they just are not good with money. But last week, the government postponed until next year the payment of $10 billion in interest and principal for bonds that were issued under local law and denominated in dollars. They just, we're going to postpone them. So the government sent the creditors an offer, and it's calling for suspending all interest payments from 2020 to 2022. And once the debt payments resume in 2023, the government would pay an interest rate of 0.5%, which would gradually increase as the economy recovers. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but come on. And what they're doing is they're waiting to see what the IMF is going to say first before, you know, because, you know, we got money in there too as a U.S., and they're going to find out what the IMF says before they're going to come to anybody else. So we'll give you more of an update as we go down the road here, but this is just beyond my thinking, you know. But then again, lending money to a country that's defaulted 9 times is kind of beyond my thinking, too.
Hey, thank you.
You have a great day.
You too. That's Jackie Vague. She's in Hollister, Missouri, with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. You know, the sign-up period for a program called WIP Plus is now open for farmers suffering losses because of natural disasters during the last 2 years. WIP Plus is the continuation of a federal disaster aid program. You know, farmers in the Corn Belt will recall it as a program used last year to bump up prevent plant payments by 15%. Congress introduced WIP Plus last summer. Then, during the December appropriations process, it dropped in an additional $1.5 billion in funding and expanded qualifying crop losses to include losses due to excessive moisture and D3 and D4 drought. Now, producers who suffered either of these losses in 2018 or 2019 can apply for WIP Plus assistance through their local FSA office today, says University of Illinois research specialist Krista Swanson.
So the program provides payments for yield losses, and we're still waiting on there's just a lot of unknowns. So I guess going on what we know is that the sign-up period started March 23rd. However, FSA offices across the state do not have what they need to process the application. So there is a copy of the application online that anyone can look at. We're hearing that some counties are going ahead and filling those out with farmers. Other counties are just taking names and putting people on a list.
Again, although USDA opened sign-up March 23rd, 2020, county offices are not yet able to process applications, and don't have an estimate on when they'll be equipped to do so. Some counties are filling out the draft paperwork. Others are simply taking names. The application is not difficult, says Swanson.
They have provided a payment calculation, and we can tell from the calculation that you needed to have a pretty substantial yield loss off of what you would normally have for a crop. So it's kind of based on the expected value of a crop relative to the value of the crop harvested. And that's also reduced by any insurance indemnity payments. So again, you would have to have had a loss per the terms of their calculation that exceeded any crop insurance payment. But we don't know what this value rate is that's being used in this calculation.
Well, that missing value means almost every farmer should just sign up for WIP Plus. Farmers can contact FSA offices to express their intent to apply and ask to be notified when applications can be processed. The USDA has not published a sign-up deadline. One final note, the WIP Plus program is not related to the coronavirus direct payments Congress funded through the recently passed CARES Act. On this Wednesday, let's check the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Let's begin right here in the United States. Farmers are rolling in the fields in parts of the Midwest. How are conditions and how will they be over the next 10 days or so?
Well, a large part of that Ohio River Valley area is saturated with moisture, along with the Delta and the southeastern states. We keep getting rain events to occur in these areas and not getting good drying conditions between events. And that is going to be ongoing over the next 7 days. I think as we go into the second week of the outlook, we will get a little better spacing between the events. And we'll also get a little bit better warming. So there'll be a little bit more field work, I think, in the first week of May, whereas this last week in April, we're still going to have to kind of work our way around some of the precipitation, and overall progress is probably not going to be all that great. The volume of rain that's going to occur in this first week of the outlook is still great enough to be of some concern. No flooding of serious proportions will occur, but the total amounts of moisture that occur in that Ohio Basin area is probably going to run something of the order of 1 to 3 inches and maybe something a little bit more. We'll probably see 1 to 2 inches in the Delta and Tennessee River Basin area, and then we'll see erratic rains in the southeastern states. In the meanwhile, the upper Midwest and the northeastern part of the plains will probably see the lightest rain, and we'll probably still come up with a couple tenths to three-quarters of an inch. It will be a little cooler there, of course. And so field progress may not be all that great there either, at least not as far as coarse grains is concerned. We're doing really well on oats and some of the other early season crops as the farther north you go.
Turn your attention to South America. We have had some concerns about the crops in the southern part of Brazil. Can you tell me what conditions are like there?
Yeah, the biggest issue in the past, of course, has been in Rio Grande do Sul, where there was a lack of moisture through a large part of the summer soybean and corn production season. Of course, there were a lot of yield cuts that resulted from that. But now we have kind of a different situation that is becoming more of a concern, and that is regarding the second season corn or the safrinha corn crop. And we're talking about the interior parts of southern Brazil now, which would include the southwest corner of Mato Grosso through Mato Grosso do Sul into Paraná and parts of São Paulo. These states represent a fair amount of that second season corn crop. The topsoil is firming up very quickly right now. Subsoil moisture is still okay, but we've got a full 10 days, if not 2 weeks, of dry weather ahead. Temperatures will be seasonably warm, but not hot. But steady decline in soil moisture will occur. Well, reproduction for a lot of these crops will occur in mid-May, And so we're probably going to come to that point in time and not have much moisture in the ground unless some kind of significant rain event occurs in the second week of May. And so we're watching real closely for that right now. That's going to have a big influence on market mentality if we don't get a significant amount of rain before mid-May.
What are your thoughts on the dry conditions that stretch from France to the production areas in Russia?
It's an amazingly large amount of real estate that's involved with this dry pattern. It's something you don't see very often. It is serious in some places and just a concern in others. Probably the driest region right now remains surrounding Romania. It includes Moldova and southwestern Ukraine. Those areas are really pretty darn dry. Temperatures have been fairly mild to cool, though, in the last couple of weeks. So there's not a lot of crop moisture demand, and the crop development is very sluggish. Temperatures are in the 40s and 50s most afternoons and dropping down to the 30s at night, some light freezes once in a while. So the crop isn't in any kind of a mood to develop significantly right now, which is really good, while the precipitation pattern is so poor. Now, as we go forward through the next week, I don't think we'll see a lot of change, slightly warmer, but not a lot, and precipitation will stay minimal. There will be an increase in temperatures during the first week of May, and we will see perhaps a continuation of limited rainfall. I don't think it'll be dry, but the amount of moisture will probably not keep caught up with the evaporation rates that occur with temperatures getting into the 60s and perhaps a few 70s Fahrenheit. So that area will become a greater concern. Now, I focused in on that particular area, but it's also very dry in Kazakhstan and also the eastern parts of Russia's southern region. And Russia's southern region produces 43% of the total wheat crop, so it's a very important production area, although the whole region is not hurting real bad at this point in time. We'll need to watch that very closely. And as far as France and Germany is concerned, I think they're going to see some warmer temperatures in the first week of May. If they don't do better with rain between now and then, they're probably going to also become quite dry. Now, that would be northern France. Southern France is plenty moist, along with Spain and Portugal right now.
Any concerns in the growing regions for China?
China has had a really tough spring in the south. This is mostly rice country, but there's a little rapeseed that's involved, and a very minor amount of wheat and corn, but it's definitely too wet in what they call the Yangtze River Basin area. They just picked up on another 2 to 6 inches of rain over this past week. That's on top of 20 to 36 inches during the period from March 1st through about April 6th. So it's definitely too wet down that way, to say the least. Now, the most important corn and soybean producing areas in China are farther to the north and have not been involved with that excessive moisture situation. In fact, the moisture profile in east central China is almost ideal. And winter wheat is starting to develop very aggressively and taking full advantage of the moisture that's there. The temperatures are warming nicely. Some early season corn planting is likely underway, and so is spring wheat and sugar beets farther to the north. Only the northeast provinces of China are in need of a significant warm-up. They have plenty of moisture, so as soon as the temperatures turn warmer, we'll start seeing some planting more aggressive up there as well.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.